This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects all of us in a format that allows you to consume it in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. But first, now, I've had a pretty fun career as a journalist and communications consultant. I've interviewed sitting, former, and future presidents. I've worked with very successful and smart, that is often not the same thing, technologists. And I have written about some very fascinating people. But last week, I got a chance to interview Bob Frankston for this podcast, and I have to admit, I was starstruck for once. Most people I know don't really know who he is, but in the technology world, he's one of the brightest stars. He began his rise to tech stardom co-creating a computer application called VisiCalc with Dan Bricklin, which was the first spreadsheet program. My dad used it for his accounting business, and it made his life and work much easier and profitable for his last few years. So I'm grateful for that. But beyond that, if it wasn't for VisiCalc, there would have been no Lotus 1-2-3. Okay, you maybe don't remember that. And there would have been no Excel. Okay, now you're catching on. Which could have meant there would be no Microsoft or Google or Facebook. At least not now. So maybe it's a good/bad thing. He is a graduate of MIT, has a slew of technology awards. He's an angel investor. And his work at Microsoft was central in developing home networks and broadband service for internet connectivity. So basically, the reason you are listening to me right now was, in no small part, because of his work. I've followed Bob for several years, especially when a technologist has said to me, "Have you seen Frankston's column?" He's been writing for the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers publication since 2013. And his technical knowledge is so far above what I can handle that it really makes my head swim. But it's generally tied to a crucial social problem, which means that I have to make an effort to understand what he's talking about. And part of that is how I do this show. Over the past 7 years, his writing has helped me work through how important technology is to the advancement of mankind. Over the past couple of years, he and I have joined in political discussions on Hiawatha Bray's Facebook page. Hiawatha is the technology editor for the Boston Globe. And I was quite honored when Bob asked to connect with me directly earlier this year. Since then, we have conversed privately on several issues related to those discussions and how certain people can be unproductive on social media. But mostly on the issue of the telecommunications industry, which is one of Bob's pet peeves. And I was thrilled when he accepted an invitation from me to do this interview. I was so thrilled that after 90 minutes in our first session, I realized I had forgotten to start the recording. So what you're getting today is actually the second interview. The first conversation was regarding an article in Ars Technica about how 5G networks, which are supposed to increase data streams, were not performing as well as 4G in the speed area. So I asked Bob to explain the article, and he decided to take me on a history lesson instead. Now, Bob sees the telecommunication industry to be an extension of the railroad industry in the 19th century. The idea of sending the mail on trains was set up to make railroads profitable. And since then, the primary purpose of government regulation has been to make sure that whatever regulations were found necessary to ensure the civilian population were able to communicate with each other, that those regulations would not interfere with the ability of the industry to make a huge profit. That goal has been no more obvious than the fight for net neutrality and the advancement of 5G networks. Listen carefully to what Bob has to say. You will actually learn what the controversy is really about. What is the difference between 5G and 4G?
Well, there's no question what do you mean by 4G. A lot of this stuff, you know, is marketing terminology.
Yeah.
Because, and it's, you know, you take a look at the evolution of the term 4G, you know, there was a sort of a specific definition that Verizon tried to push on T-Mobile, that we have 4G too.
Yeah.
So you've got a whole set of protocols that get bunched together. You know, you go back to the whole history, I won't go into the whole history of the digital network and the assumptions behind it. And then you group the terms into sort of, you know, general categories, because there was another evolution for EV, I don't know, the whole thing Verizon did for CDMA, evolution yeah. one and evolution two. I mean, take a look at Wi-Fi. It's now, you know, it used to be 802.11. Then the marketing people said, nobody like a number. We got to give it a name, like 802.11. Now we have Wi-Fi 6 because it sounds bigger than 5G. And now 5G for some people means 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi. So it's all very confusing.
Okay. So there is no real difference between the 4G and the 5G, right?
There's actually a significant difference.
Okay. So what is the difference?
Okay. So 4G is an interesting thing in its own right, because there's also the term LTE, long-term evolution, right, which has, you know, marketing term, which is meant to be sort of a data packet network that was going to complement the voice network.
Okay.
So it was relatively agnostic. It was just data packets and everything. And then the voice over IP showed, you know, you can do voice over data network. We don't need to keep our 3G network. So this went all against the basic design point of the whole telecom industry. But it left 4G, I mean, there are all sorts of cellular protocols behind 4G too. But 4G, as just the radio part, was relatively agnostic. Okay. It was not being sold as, you know, especially smart network. It was just, okay, we can offer data too. And a lot of the cellular world, I mean, it's a throwback to the dial-up modem days. Like, I've got a T-Mobile hotspot device, and you have to connect to, where does your ISP connect you to? It's like the days of DSL when you had, the internet was treated as another long distance company.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of legacy of a world in which you would dial in and connect. And even today we talk about accessing the internet. And that's still a lot of the way people think about and define the protocols. I have a very different view where we have just generic connectivity. But, you know, the telecom world just goes back, really still in the days when they would build a special network for each purpose.
Okay.
So there was a, you know, there was a telegraph network, and then there was a separate talking telegraph, a telephone network built. And it was very complicated because you had to maintain precise details inside the network in order for it to work, because voice is very delicate and special. It's very expensive to do that. And then we got another network for video, because video was different. Each one had its own special network facilities.
Right.
And there was the digital phone network where, again, you had dumb endpoints, so the network had to be precise to carry everything. Now, that which brings us, again, skipping through a lot of stuff. You've got the cellular protocol. It's a very complicated solution to the problem. How do you share this medium? We had the analog, and then discovered digital worked far, far better than it was supposed to. But again, LTE was still of the age when voice was still separate.
Okay.
So with LTE, it became a generic packet network with a cellular network behind it that basically was defined for voice, no special data things or anything.
Okay.
Now, 5G is confusing because it's a marketing term that covers multiple disparate elements. One part is the 5G radio, which has a lot of similarities to the Wi-Fi 6 radio.
Okay.
And it's a decent radio, but unlike LTE was designed for long range, the LTE is much shorter range in order to meet all the requirements of low latency and all these other things. So that's a problem in order to do a 5G network.
Okay.
But what makes 5G special? Well, you need to now have a story which you tell based on the fact that it's low latency, you can do virtual reality if you're all on the same access point. So the marketing people hear this and say, let's stretch that to the network. Now, the real problem so let's be clear, then the term 5G is used, I should use the word fraudulently, but it is used, the researchers, when they a lot of the university researchers, when they say they're working on 5G, are just talking about the radio.
Yeah.
But to the marketing people, 5G is the value of fast lanes. Do you know all that talk about network neutrality?
Right.
So in the 5G world, they're selling you fast lanes. And the reason you need a fast lane is because you're going to do, think of it, what could you possibly do for, let's see. How about remote virtual reality? There's this.
Ah, okay, I get it. That's been a few years ago. I went to a dinner put on by a tech firm, big tech firm. I won't mention who they are. And I just happened to sit down next to the founder of Oculus. Okay, and and I had my press badge on, so it wasn't like it was unusual that I'd be reporting things. But we had a lovely talk, and I was taking notes as we were talking. And he told me that Oculus would never really work the way everyone is talking about it working, because the network or the World Wide Web was far too slow to be able to handle the amount of data it had to be processed. And that's why when you take a look at VR games, they're really kind of lame as compared to the ones you see on your screen.
Well, it turns out, I mean, Steam showed, in fact, there is a lot of capacity in the network.
Yeah.
But the problem with VR was it didn't even work wirelessly locally in the same room
Right.
because it's so sensitive. So one of the solutions was to use very high frequency, special radio, short distance, and all that. And you could make it if you tried hard enough to work in within the same room. But it turns out that that wasn't the real problem with VR. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that was the real problem with VR.
Okay, so what does that mean?
Another way, it's about roller coasters and getting nauseous on roller coasters.
Okay.
In other words, all the human factors, turns out fooling the brain, you can only take it so far.
Okay, so in other words, VR
Yeah.
made you
Nauseous.
nauseous. Okay.
But this extent reaction, but the real reason is it's not that there aren't applications of VR, but they're not necessarily the glitziest applications.
Okay.
In other words, I can see using it, if you're going to do surgery and you're in the same room, it can give you a view inside and things. There's some special niche applications where it can be useful. But it's not, but the reason I'm mentioning it is not to say VR is bad. I mean, I played with it. You can look at my whole set of VR glasses, which are
Yeah.
sitting there unused. It's that, the marketing people glommed onto it and said, oh, we're going to need remote VR. I mean, they can't even get local to work, but somehow, because that radio can do maybe improve VR locally, they had a story. They tell the story of telesurgery. They tell the story of economist cars. These are all hokey stories, because if you look at them, they work better. They work well in best efforts or aren't that useful.
Okay.
And the other fundamental problem is that you can't depend on 5G if you can do applications. So you got to make it work well without 5G.
Okay.
And then if it works well without 5G, why pay a premium? We've seen this before with picture phone. If you depend on the network, it doesn't work. As soon as people figure out how to do it over generic connectivity, we're now doing Zoom everywhere.
Yeah.
But the problems that 5G solves from a business perspective is the important one.
Okay.
How much more money is Verizon getting when I use Zoom versus when I don't use Zoom?
I don't know. Are they getting more money?
No, that's the
Okay.
problem.
Okay.
Okay, they're worried about being a dumb pipe. That's the biggest fear. Because there's no differentiation, there's no business model. They get no advantage if they invest all this money and don't get the benefits of the applications created using that. If you have
Okay.
to pay for a fast lane, then they make money. Okay, that's
Okay,
the goal.
So they're going to sell 5G as a separate feature.
As a feature, well, this, now the marketing says fast is better. Same solution that, you know, Tesla says you need, if you had 0 to 90 acceleration in 0.5 seconds, you'll solve the problem of rush hour.
Yeah, that's not true.
I know, but that's the story, you know. You know, a Netflix stream can work well at 2 megabits. Yet they're saying you need it to operate at a gigabit. And this is what I call the water flow model, that each light bulb is like an open spigot. 5 light bulbs using 5 times much network capacity. No, you're not using any network capacity. But that's the story that, you know, they try to tell. And people believe it. So it's really about the story and how people's under the way they think of networks is water flow. And the classic telecom network, that was even more true because you needed to reserve a path, a lane for each phone call. What voice over IP showed is you don't need a lane for each phone call. That sharing works remarkably well. And if occasionally there's a glitch, okay, repeat it, no big deal. You co-evolve with what works.
Okay.
But what's confusing to people is how well it works. It works so remarkably well that people can't believe that it only works because we allow failure. That's the counter to what. It's the same as trying to explain science to people. The reason the science works so well is because if we get feedback from reality, and it's fallible, it's an operational approach.
Okay. So we understand that 5G is a real thing.
It's a bag of protocols.
It's a bag of protocols, and it does.
Wait, you say it's a real thing, but remember, T-Mobile is selling you 5G without 5G radios, whatever that means.
Yeah, that's the next thing I wanted to get into. So we keep talking about, you know, Huawei is selling this stuff to everybody in the world except here in the U.S.
And Qualcomm wants to sell you 5G chips. And yeah. What's remarkable is none of these people mention Wi-Fi 6 and that a whole other world because it's such a threat to them.
Okay, why is Wi-Fi 6 a threat to 5G?
Because you've got 2 radios which add the capacity. You can do this low, high performance VR type stuff using either radio.
Okay.
One radio generates billable events. The other you own and just works.
Okay. So the telecom industry can charge you for using 5G, which gives you faster connection speeds, which is in violation of net neutrality.
The fast lane part of it does, yes.
Okay.
But 5G is you need to get rid of your fiber, which is only defined over the radio network,
which makes it. Okay, so it's in competition with the cable companies.
Well, with their own, cable plant, which is why you get the weird situation. You can buy a regular set-top box from Verizon. That's classic old-style set-top box. But if you want a modern set-top box that works over Wi-Fi, you buy it from Verizon Wireless. You go to Fios, they'll send you Verizon Wireless, which will sell you a set-top box which has no mention of Fios. If I get a Comcast set-top box, the Flex box, the one you get if you have only an internet-only subscription, it works over Fios too. You know, it's all underneath all this. It just uses generic connectivity.
Okay.
But Verizon Wireless sells it as a 5G set-top box, even though it has nothing to do with 5G. But if you happen to get your service via 5G, you can still get the internet, the same chance to get over cable because the box is a generic IP box.
Okay, so this brings me to the next question. Who is actually benefiting from 5G?
Speculators. It gives the illusion that the telecom industry is viable.
Okay, so the lesson we can learn here is don't listen to the advertising about 5G as a selling point for changing your cellular provider.
Yeah. But well, first, why do you even have salary providers, which is a whole discussion. There's no differentiation really. They don't
Yeah,
make any money.
I really don't want to get that deep into this one
No, but I'm
on
just
this
saying,
particular
but they're
issue.
going to share the same infrastructure, antennas and radios. So yeah.
Okay. So, are there any downsides to adoption of 5G?
In what sense? Because
Well,
the
okay.
fact that your phone becomes hotter, the battery life is shorter. You only get 5G benefits in some cases. They want to charge you more money. Yeah, but if they don't charge you any more money, and they happen to have a 5G capability in your chip, it's probably not too harmful, and
Okay.
Qualcomm will be very happy and thank you for buying it.
Okay. So that you brought up one of the things about how battery life won't last as long. And is that because what I've heard about 5G technology is that it is an energy hog.
Which is interesting because I need to get deeper into this, but I think with Wi-Fi 6 might actually improve your battery life by allowing for lower power.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I always have my phone set to use Wi-Fi services wherever I go,
Well, that's
rather than
about the
data.
billing model also. But yes, it makes sense. A nearby radio should do better than one further away. But remember, the amount of money they're going to have to invest in 5G radios is a real problem. Because unless they can demonstrate a compelling advantage and have applications that are valuable and depend on 5G, they've got a problem. And that's the picture phone story.
Okay. So essentially, the killer app for 5G is VR then.
It doesn't work locally. No, or telesurgery, which is also a murder. The other story they try to tell is autonomous cars, was the cars have a very complex network to speak to each other, which is not necessarily true. I mean, all of these stories fall apart once you try to do good engineering. A lot of them depend on the belief that you need a special network for each purpose, and that seemed to be true until voice over IP happened.
Okay. For all the people who are geopolitically inclined, is China's advance or lead in 5G going to hurt the economy at all?
Whose economy?
Anyone who doesn't have 5G
It might be the
somehow.
opposite.
Okay.
It might hurt their economy more.
And why would that?
Because it basically is the anti-internet and might make it even more difficult. Because the way I put it, China benefits from lottery capitalism. You violate a few laws, if you get away with it, you're a hero. If you fail, you lose. And the more they can prevent unmanaged innovation, the more difficult it becomes for them to break out of
Okay.
stasis.
So China's push for 5G dominance is probably a bad idea for, or could be a very bad idea for them.
Yes. Remember the firewall of China, the great firewall around China and everything.
Yeah.
It becomes it. You can do a manager. I mean, you look at all these. Remember when Japan was going to take over the world until they
Yeah.
caught up and hit a wall?
Yeah.
I don't want to underestimate China. They've got a large market, they've got innovative people, but there's a culture that makes it more difficult to sort of get ahead of the pack.
Okay. That makes sense. The other thing I've been wondering about 5G, there's a basic problem because we mentioned this earlier about access to the internet that exists outside of metropolitan areas. We get into the rural areas, they're not getting 5G. I don't live in a rural area. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area in a middle class neighborhood, and we still don't have even the basic AT&T fiber option.
Yeah, well, that's because you have to have too many smart people. Palo Alto tried to do fiber, then they had to take it out because they're worried about being sued by Comcast. It gets weird because this is where you get people who understand the old technology too well.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
you know what I'm saying is in the city of in Redwood City,
Yes.
in my particular neighborhood, we can't get that. If you go to the wealthier neighborhoods like Redwood Shores or Mount Carmel, yeah, you've got all that stuff. But
Yeah.
the only choice we have for high speed data is Comcast. That's it. There's no other choice.
What performance do they give you?
Well, they say I get up to 100 megabits per second. I generally average around 30 or 40, which is plenty for what I need.
Yeah, the dirty secret is that actually is a lot. Now, yeah. My Comcast gives me up to a gigabit down, but only 40 up.
Yeah.
Not to make you jealous or anything.
Yeah, and I get around 2 or 3 up. But again, that's enough.
The question is, how much more money would they make by giving you better connectivity?
Actually, I have that option for better connectivity for about 3 times the price that I'm paying now.
Okay. It's interesting. I went from 100 to a gigabit. It costs about 5% more. I mean, there's an artificial marketplace, which is a whole another discussion we could get into.
Yeah.
But the question is, why doesn't the city just put out its own plant and pay for it out of the taxes and get in 1 year of what you pay for that subscription, you can own it and have wireless coverage.
Yeah, I know. And it's one of the things I've been arguing with our city council about for about 10 years.
And what you discover is most of those people who argue for city ownership really just want to follow the telco model. They still want to build and everything. So they got the same economic problem as the telcos do, which is what slowed it down. That's why I need to think differently and look at it, all the coverage. I mean, you look at what's the difference between Verizon 5G or fiber and all that. They're just bits. And that's the concept which people have trouble with. They think every bit is special, and that's where, you know, where we need a real understanding, where 5G goes the opposite direction by saying, no, you need a special network.
Yeah. So essentially to wrap up, 5G is coming. In some places it's maybe here. Yeah, well, maybe, okay.
Look, I will mention one bit of history, which is I mentioned in 2004 when the phone company said, you need a special network for multimedia called IMS.
Yeah.
Until one day people realized we already have multimedia. Why do we need that? And Lucent tanked.
Okay. So going back to wrap up.
Yes.
5G is primarily a marketing issue. It's probably inevitable, but it doesn't really give us anything more than we already have if the telecom industry would only give us what they can actually provide.
I will say one thing, 5G will happen. I suspect it's mostly going to happen by having a stamp that says now with 5G and just claiming they won.
So just like Nixon won in Vietnam.
Yes.
Okay. Let's hope it's not that much of a disaster. But Bob, thank you very much.
Okay, glad to help.
I've really enjoyed developing our relationship to this point. I've learned a lot in the past couple of times.
And hope you'll get Redwood City to own the future.
Who knows? We'll give it a shot. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
So that was Bob Frankston on the efficacy and truth in the 5G area. Now we hit on a lot of things here. It's kind of important that you focus on what's going on. We are in a battle for our lives, essentially, when it comes to how the internet works. And there are forces out there that don't want to make it easy for us. That's just the fact of the matter. And our telecommunications companies are not necessarily our friends. I've been a T-Mobile guy for a very long time, like 20 years I've been with T-Mobile. And I like their service, I like their product, but their advertising has always annoyed me. Even when they used one of my Hollywood crushes in Catherine Zeta-Jones as a spokesperson. But that aside, we have to realize that they're trying to sell us a bill of goods and that we should be telling our politicians to be extra careful about the statements that they're making as far as what it is they can do. And our legislators need to start getting an education when it comes to this. I'm hoping there's somebody out there in government who's listening to this podcast right now, because it can make a difference in how we make policy going forward. Let's not have industry make our government policy for us. So that has been Crucial Tech. If you have any questions or comments, you can go to the anchor.fm/crucialtech website, and you can actually leave a 1-minute audio message, which can be your comment or question. And if you say something of real interest, we might turn it into a show, and we might even make you a star. I want to give a special shout out to Ramon Bravo, Nolan Wilson, and my son, Jonathan Covey, for this great new theme song. This is called August. My name is Lou Covey. This has been Crucial Tech, a Footwasher Media production.